is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, June 19th, 2023. This is Juneteenth. Taylor Schwenk is producing back in Bristol today. I'm Buster Olney in Montana after our Sunday night game at Fenway Park. A big weekend series for the Red Sox. Big concerns for the Yankees emerging. And by the way, we had that game at Fenway last night, and I bumped into Carl Ravage and Eduardo Perez at Boston's Logan Airport this morning. Taylor, you know, they flew in from Omaha on late Saturday, got in at like 2 o'clock in the morning, then they went and did the Sunday night game, and then they're up at last night, and then they're up at, you know, 3 o'clock going out to Logan because they're going back to the College World Series to call another game tonight.
And you know that Ravi is going to hop in the hotel gym when he gets to Omaha. You know, he's going to get his pump in. He's going to pound it on the treadmill. Whew, I can't. I'm too soft for that lifestyle.
Ravi's energy never dissipates. And Eduardo, you know, mostly for the same. I think I'd say the same thing about him. But Ravi just, I mean, he is on point. It's like there's a green light on he's on camera at all 24 hours a day. I don't know how he does it.
I would love a reality show of Ravi's life, just following him around, hanging out in Connecticut, you know, on the shore, and then bouncing around from game to game.
No, I hear you, but if you're going to do a reality show of anyone, it would be Eduardo.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt.
Because Eduardo is insane. Like, we talked last week how he went, like, you know, he did the Sunday night game in New York, and then he went to Miami, and then he went to London, and then he's back to New York, and then Omaha. Yeah, he's crazy. I think Eduardo's just crazy. By the way, did you see last night his dad, Tony, called into Sunday Night Baseball, you know, on Father's Day? That was really fun.
So sweet. I love when you guys do that on the broadcast there. Did something similar. Who was that for Mother's Day? Was that Lars Nootbaar?
We did it before the game. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but Alex Verdugo's dad, Joseph, called in. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, it was the same sort of setup, and Verdugo was surprised. And his dad thanked him for the edibles on camera. And then he cut in and he goes, fruit edibles. It was the fruit edibles. And then a little while later, Alex Verdugo's brother sent out a picture of a fruit basket, said, "Here are the edibles."
That's great. Oh, got to keep it family friendly on the Sunday Night Baseball broadcast.
No doubt about it. All right. Red Sox, Yankees. Red Sox won game one after they had won the first game of this series on Friday. And then in game two, Anthony Rizzo has been struggling so badly, absolutely clubbed the ball to straightaway center field, and here's what happened.
Swings here and hammers one out to center, going back to Duran near the wall, and he makes the catch. Oh boy, up against the triangle of the Red Sox bullpen near the 420 marker, and he was able to haul it in. I don't know how he did it.
No, it was a beautiful catch because he had to basically make the catch right in the triangle and slam against the wall after making the catch. And Anthony, the look on Rizzo's face after that was like, oh boy. That, of course, was the voice of Boot Shambi on ESPN Radio, the legend. He's going to be joining us in a few minutes coming up. We're going to talk a lot about the Cincinnati Reds, about the National League Central, about the San Francisco Giants who've been surging of late, as well as the slumping Yankees. Tristan Casas added to the Red Sox lead in the bottom of the fifth.
Swing and a line drive curling down the right field line, and that one will touchdown and then hop over the wall as a fan touched it. It'll be an automatic double, and two will come in to score as Casas laces one into the corner, and the Red Sox extend their lead. It's now 4-1 Boston.
And the Yankees offense continued to limp along into the ninth inning.
The 1-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. Ball game. Red Sox win it. They sweep the double dip and sweep the series from the Yankees.
And over the last two weekends, the Red Sox have taken 5 out of 6 from the Yankees. That was the Red Sox's first doubleheader sweep in Fenway Park of the Yankees since 1976. And that's why Jaron Duran, Red Sox outfielder who made that great catch, was on SportsCenter with Michael Eaves.
Jaron, first of all, I want to get to your catch in a moment, but let's talk about what I just said. You sweep the series, you sweep the doubleheader as well. I mean, that's a very tight and competitive AL East division. Tell me the value of doing that as opposed to just getting the wins.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. I mean, it's always good to beat a team in your division, and especially a good team like the Yankees. Like, they've been rolling, and we've been hitting our bumps in the road, but, you know, we were able to come out strong and put it to them, and it's always a good thing to beat them.
So, again, the count was 4-1 with the final score, but I'm not sure that would have been the case if not for your play in center field. Take us through what you saw as soon as that ball left the bat.
I mean, I knew he got it good. It sounded good off the bat. And me and Huddy had been working on taking my head off the ball, so that was one of the first times I was able to actually take my head off the ball and take a couple steps, which helped me cover some ground and catch that ball. And as soon as I got in, I ran into Huddy. I was like, hey, did you see me take my head off the ball?
There you go. That's good coaching right there. I thought one of the more impressive aspects, Jaron, was your ability to pull your hands back right before you hit the wall. Like, not only you made the catch, you didn't hurt yourself either.
Yeah, I mean, I would have gone into the wall if I had to hurt myself to make that play. So it was for Bayo, and I was going to do anything to catch that ball for him.
We got word on Sunday that the Pittsburgh Pirates are calling up number one overall pick from 2021, Henry Davis, to the big leagues. It's a catcher who's hitting .284 with 11 homers and 30 RBI in 51 games in the minors this season. We're going to be talking about him with Kyler McDaniel coming up. Let's see what kind of impact he's going to have on Pittsburgh as they try to win the National League Central. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets. Experience it live. You know the team you want to see live of late? The San Francisco Giants, who absolutely took it to the Dodgers over the weekend, adding on to their lead in the top of the sixth.
2-2. Wade pulls one off the end of the mitt of Freeman into right field. That's a base hit for Lamont. Coming around third, Sable. Hill score over to third, Crawford. Wade beats the lefty. It's 7-2 Giants.
That was Dave Fleming on CanBR. That is seven straight wins after the 7-3 win on Sunday. Seven straight wins for the Giants. They swept L.A., and they moved past the Dodgers into second place in the National League West. Of course, the Diamondbacks are the leaders in the West at the moment. The Giants place pitcher Alex Cobb on the injured list with an oblique strain. This happened on Sunday. This year, 5-2 with a 3.09 ERA. You know who else is surging? The Guardians. They, as we talked about with Terry Francona a few weeks ago on the podcast, they just consistently get better during the course of a season. Andre Jimenez got a hit in the top of the fourth inning.
Here comes the 1-2. Swung on, and there's a high fly ball to right, deep, headed to the corner, way back there, and that ball is off the wall. Extra bases for Jimenez. One run is in, that's Rosario. Naylor's right behind him. Jimenez thought about coming all the way around, but Mike Sarbaugh holds him up at third base with a triple.
That from WTAM 1100. Those unhappy fans you heard in the background, those of the Diamondbacks who watched their team lose 12-3 on Sunday. The Ones Who Get It Done is brought to you by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You know who's been getting it done? Bottom of the Texas lineup. They face the Blue Jays on Sunday. And one of the guys who's been anchored in those bottom four spots for Texas had a big day on Sunday.
The 3-1. That ball is hit sharply up the middle. Diving Merrifield. He can't get it. It's by him and into center. Garver comes in to score. Duran makes it to third. Leody Taveras with the RBI single to give the Rangers their first lead of the day at 7-6.
Taveras swings, and that one is driven to right center. Springer back. Bullpen shot. Out of here. Two-run home run. And the Rangers lead 10-7.
Yeah, from 105.3, the fan, the final score there was 11-7. The Cardinals and the Mets, a series between two struggling teams. Paul Goldschmidt tacked on to the Cardinals lead in the top of the second.
The pitch by Carrasco, a swing and a line drive left center. That ball gets down in the gap and it goes to the wall. It scores Tommy Edmond. Here comes Donovan around third. He's going to score on a double by Paul Goldschmidt.
John Rooney on the Cardinals radio network. The Cardinals go on to win 8-7. The Reds, the Astros. The Astros have been slumping without Yordan Alvarez. He, of course, is on the injured list with that oblique strain that he suffered. The Reds are going off. Spencer Street got a big hit in the top of the sixth.
And now Spencer Steer drives one deep left field, hit a ton, and gone! Spencer Steer has tied this game with a two-run home run out of here to left center field.
That from 700 WLW, Ellie De La Cruz got some stuff done in this game. They are a fascinating team. I think there's a clear favorite to win the National League Central at this point, and we'll be talking about that coming up. Angels, Royals. The Angels suffered a brutal loss on Sunday. They were ahead 8-2. They blew that lead. The Royals won that game on Saturday. The Angels bounced back on Sunday with help from their two superstars.
Shohei swings at this one, blasts the ball deep out into right center field. It is out of here. Ohtani connects a two-run homer right there. And the Angels have the lead. It's 3-2. And on this Father's Day, it is showtime. And here's Trout swinging and hitting a ball high and deep out into left center. And it's Trout of here. Back-to-back homers on back-to-back pitches. And the Angels have a 4-2 lead.
That was from Angels Radio, 8:30 a.m. Phillies, A's, Kyle Schwarber hit a home run. We know he did because it's June.
2-1 pitch on the way. Swing and a fly ball hit deep. Left center field up the alley. And looking at it is Rooker, and it is gone. And Kyle Schwarber with an opposite field bomb. That is his 20th home run of the season. And another leadoff shot, his third of the road trip. And the Phillies take the 1-0 lead.
From 94 WIP, the Phillies going to win that game 3-2. That's six straight wins for the Phillies, but the Braves have also won six straight, and the Marlins have four straight wins. The Phillies are 38-34, eight games out of first place in the National League East. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, the NBA Finals have wrapped up, but it is already peak silly season in the NBA as Bradley Beal on the move to the Phoenix Suns. And here at ESPN Podcast, we're breaking it down from all angles. You've got the Hoop Collective, the Right Time, and the Low Post all talking Bradley Beal to the Phoenix Suns, joining up with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. You can find all of those shows wherever you're listening to this podcast right now, and they are also all on YouTube.
The NFL schedule drops this week. And you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Download the app or visit VividSeats.com today. That's VividSeats.com. Today, code baseball. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck.
The legend.
On its way. Out of here.
Boog Ciambi on Baseball Tonight.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Ciambi, the legend, play-by-play man on ESPN Radio. He also does Cubs games on marquee television. And Boog, your open is still the best open. I'm sorry. How did that happen that you got the best open?
Oh, no. I just randomly appear, and here I am with the amazing open. I know.
Yeah. Well, it's well-earned for sure. And you know, we know this because I'm going to throw 1,000 topics at you today, and you're going to absolutely nail all of them. Let's start with the Cincinnati Reds. You know, I got a call to be on a show later this week in which we're basically supposed to give our division favorites from this point forward. And Boog, I got to say, like, I found the National League Central to be one of the easier divisions. Because yeah. I think the Cincinnati Reds right now, I mean, I don't think their trajectory is changing. What about you?
I mean, I think they're going to be right in it. I just don't think there's anybody in the division that's capable of, you know, stepping on the gas and going past everyone. So I think they'll be in it. I probably don't agree that there's an obvious choice in the division.
Really?
Yeah. No, just because I think that, again, you know, when you look at, we've seen all of these teams up close, and they have stretches where they're up and stretches where they're down. I think Cincinnati is super athletic, really entertaining, and very talented. But I would say at this point, I think that I almost would go as far as to say I think four teams could win the division.
Okay, run through them for me and tell me you think they could.
For Milwaukee, it would take it is health, pitching is peak. You know, the other thing is that one of the things that's sort of sneaky with the Brewers, like Christian Yelich having a good year, like not what he had, but like having a good year, they got to figure out a way to score. Will they do something? But I mean, they played it at a good enough rate the whole year. Obviously, you know, seeing what Woodruff could add, we'll see. But I still would say that we've seen Burns and Peralta be brilliant, many times. As far as the Reds, look, I was high on them, you know, at the beginning, just because I like the young pitching. Like, I didn't see it position player wise. And now, there's a ton of talent, and you can't take your eyes off De La Cruz, right? I mean, and I think that there's, you know, they're a pain. They don't catch it real well. That's a negative for them. You know, look, as far as the Cardinals, I would still say there's a ton of talent there. I don't know that they have enough pitching. I didn't expect it to be. I didn't think they had a ton of pitching last year, but I do think that there's going to be some regression with the Cardinals. And to that end, I mean that they'll start playing better. And then for the Cubs, I think that they're good enough to stick around. You know, their starting pitching is very good. Stroman's been really good. Smiley's been really good. Steele is a unicorn. They will catch it. I don't know what the high end of the offense necessarily is. So, and again, I'm not putting all of their chances at equal, but I do think that it's just not, division is just not that good. So I think that everybody could sit there and be like, yeah, we get a shot.
So to follow up on some of those, first off, you didn't mention the Pittsburgh Pirates, and I'm curious about that and what your thought is there.
I mean, it's funny because I was like going through the Pirates and the Cubs when they played one another at home. And as I started to look, I was attacking it from the standpoint of like, where have the Pirates gotten lucky? And they haven't really gotten lucky. They're just kind of a middle of the pack offensive team, a middle of the pack pitching run prevention team. And then looking at them compared to the Cubs, like, I don't think they're better than the Cubs. And then you start to say, well, maybe I'm looking at this wrong. Maybe it's, why are the Cubs underperforming? And then the Cubs proceed to win five in a row. I think that Pittsburgh's fine. And like, I guess in the end, you could throw them in there as well. They don't have, Keller's performance notwithstanding, I don't think that they have a dude up front. And I think that's going to be,
you know, one of the issues for them.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking with Kyler McDaniel coming up about Henry Davis. It'll be interesting to see what he adds to their roster as they move forward. I'm curious about what jumps at you. You've talked about the Reds' athleticism and the prospect position, guys. But watching them in person, what's it like to see the group that they have? Who stands out to you?
Right. So I haven't seen De La Cruz in person yet.
Okay.
I've only gotten a chance to see him on TV. And in fact, I haven't seen, you know, this new iteration of the Reds in person. So it's the same as you in terms of like watching on TV. And even at the beginning of the year, seeing just some of the little, you know, pieces that they have. I mean, yeah, Spencer Steer is a good hitter, you know, like stuff like that. To sit there and be like, okay, so McLean, India, like there's some good players there and they don't have enough spaces for them. Those are good problems to have.
Yeah, I can't wait to see them in person. You know, and this is from afar. You know, I have not talked to McLean, but he looks like he's coming for your lunch money when I see him play. Doesn't it? It feels like this guy's coming after you. You know, he actually reminds me of Jonathan India in his rookie year when you felt like this guy's coming after you. And Ellie De La Cruz, it's funny. You say, well, you haven't seen him in person. It doesn't matter. We've seen 18,000 highlights.
Right.
You know, and everything he does is at the top of the StatCast board. So, you know, it is what it is. So I want to give you my impression of the Cardinals. And the reason why, you know, at the beginning of the year when they got off a slow start, I said, oh, they'll find their way back. And now, as we've seen him play out and had conversations with folks over there, I just think the design is fundamentally flawed, Boog. When you're talking about a team that, as you mentioned, you know, we knew going in that their starting pitching was not going to be the best and probably was not going to be in the top half of the best. But when you got a combination of contact pitchers and really bad outfield defense, that's a problem. And that's what jumps out at me in watching them.
So, look, the trade of Bader, you know, is definitely one that they may look back on. But, you know, Montgomery's a pretty good pitcher. What I would say is that if you look at – I like Harrison Bader as a player, but I can't imagine that we're attributing all of this to him. And that said, this team doesn't feel vastly different how it was constructed than the Cardinals teams that we looked at the last couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And it'll be interesting to see what sort of deals they piece together as we go along and what sort of moves they make. Oh, before we move on, I was going to ask you about the announcement by David Freese declining the Cardinals Hall of Fame invite. You know, he of course said one of the greatest, games we've ever seen in baseball history, 2011 game six. He's voted in the Hall of Fame and he declines. In the comment he put out in a statement, this is something I've given an extreme amount of thought to humbly, even before the voting process began. I'm aware of the impact I had helping the team bring great members of the city I grew up in, including the 11th championship. I feel strongly about my decision and understand how people might feel about this. I get it. I'll wear it. Thank you for always being there for me. And I am excited to be around the Cardinals as we move forward. Boog, this is one of those stories that this is all up to David, whether or not, first off, he wants to tell the other part of the story, but I assume there's more that we don't know as soon as I saw this. What about you?
I don't know. I think certainly David went through personal stuff in St. Louis. That's for sure. And a kid that grew up there, he went to the same high school as Ryan Howard, same university as Ryan Howard. I think there were times that it was hard on him, but I think he's someone that certainly understands, you know, he grew up in the area. So he understands like what this is all about. And he understands that fan base. So, I mean, whether it's an issue of like not feeling quite worthy of it or what, but I don't think that something really significant is going to be uncovered here. In my opinion, I think you're probably going to, I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately he changes mind, but I would just say right now, it's an interesting one. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, it caught your attention the other day when the announcement came down. And, you know, based on how quickly Derek Gould had the information, I suspect it's something that he had been talking about with the Post-Dispatch for a while about sort of how he was feeling about things. Well, I'm sure we're going to learn more as we go forward. So, Boog, when I covered the Yankees with Joe Torre as the manager, he used to say that no team looks worse than a team slumping offensively. Oh. And the Yankees are testing that theory. Yeah. Certainly over the weekend, a three-game sweep at Fenway Park at the hands of the Red Sox. You know, after they lost game one of the doubleheader yesterday, I asked Aaron Boone the question that everyone, I think, is wondering, which is how much is the impact of Aaron Judge having on the rest of that lineup? And it was like Booney was ready for it. Like he grabbed his opportunity because he grabbed his lineup card and he was jabbing at the names of the lineup card. He goes, you know what? That's the storyline. He essentially said he rejected it, and he said, look, these guys in this lineup card, they are all capable of doing damage. And, you know, to say that the Judge absence is affecting the rest of the lineup, he thinks that's an excuse. The fact is, they look terrible.
Yes.
They look dead to the point that, and sorry, I veer back to, again, my time covering the Yankees. In the year 2000, you know, the Yankees had, with an older group of players, Paul O'Neill's nearing the end of his career, Tino Martinez wasn't going great, some other guys were struggling, and Brian Cashman in June made a really important trade for David Justice at about this time in that season because he recognized, look, they're flat. And based on what he had, I think he really felt like that they needed something more than what they had. I think that's where the Yankees are now, because I don't think they really have any idea when Judge is coming back.
All right, I got two things for you. One, I'm going to come after you because you basically just sat there, gave the Joe Torre quote, and then used flat and dead like 16 times.
Okay.
And then the other thing that I would say is to think that Aaron Judge being out isn't impacting them is ridiculous, but I don't think that's what's going on here. This team's 28th in the majors in on-base percentage. They are so far away from what the Yankees have been for three decades now, and Aaron Judge could come back and put up an on-base percentage of Barry Bonds proportions, and it's not moving them from 28th to 6th. So the problem when you're 28th, there are only 30 teams, by the way, when you're 28th out of 30 teams in, as I like to term it at times, in making outs, you got problems, man. And it's not just something that one guy's going to solve, even if I'm going to sit here and buy into, and I do, like the collateral effect the Judge can have in a positive way on other players. But you're 28th and you make that many outs, one guy is not solving it. Not. Nope.
Okay. But I do think that they need to put a, prop up this group somehow, some way. Like, I'm looking at the lineup saying, I don't know if DJ LeMay who's going to come back, right? He doesn't look the same. They apparently are committed to keeping Anthony Volpe in the big leagues. Boog, I can't remember the last time I saw a big leaguer where they pitched the guy same way every single at bat. And it didn't feel like that the player was making an adjustment, right? Because he's a young guy and he's learning at the big league level.
What's he going to be? My other question. With Volpe, I think the thing I worry about a little bit is you start to sit there and say, okay, what's this going to look like on the high side? Like, what's the player going to end? I agree that we're at a place where it's, hey, we need to think about moving, you know, sending him out. But also, what's the player? It at least raises questions about a guy. What ultimately does a good year of him look like?
Because he expands his strike zone so much. Yeah. I'm guessing. Yeah. I mean, that last plate appearance last night, they didn't throw him a strike the entire time. They're going up and out of the zone and he's following them up through it. Stanton, we know, goes through stretches where he loses his timing and then he gets his timing back and he goes off. That one, I'm sure. With Rizzo, it feels like a giant mystery, sort of what's going on with Rizzo. I wonder, you know, he had the collision at first base with Fernando Tatis Jr. You wonder if he's playing through some sort of an injury. But, man, offense, I agree with you. You know, the hallmark of the Yankees for the last 25 years has been they control the strike zone. This is not what we typically see out of the Yankees in terms of controlling the strike zone.
No, that's right. And that's the, you know, the biggest shift. And again, Judge will come back and Judge will help and it'll get better. I just wonder, you know, I think going into the season, you anticipated that this had a chance to be a, you know, an elite level offense. And I don't see that as a potential outcome now.
Okay, I got a potential candidate that they try to pursue in a deal. That would be Willie Adames of the Milwaukee Brewers. We saw last year that the Brewers are willing to trade Josh Hader. Willie Adames is in about the same spot. He's got 4.5 years of service time. He's going to be a free agent after 2024. Adames could be kind of a placeholder, help him at shortstop, upgrade the offense, give a little bit more life into that group. What do you think? And if you want to throw out another name, I'm willing to listen. There was some speculation over the weekend about Tyler O'Neill, and I'm like, no. Like, you would need to see him having some success before you were to be aggressive on that front. You want to get a player who's going well.
Yeah, and the other, you know, shortstop candidate that, you know, has not had a good year would be Tim Anderson, right? I mean,
yeah.
When you're talking about
– who, by the way, also is really aggressive, chasing balls out of the zone.
No doubt. And then he gets to share the side of the infield with Josh Donaldson. So, you know, I'm not sure that there's one guy. I mean, certainly when Adames came to Milwaukee a couple years ago, I guess it was in 21 in May, he just lit them on fire. I don't know if the Brewers would do it, and I don't know, you know, the level of impact that I really think he would have.
Okay. Anybody come to mind?
No. I mean, like, you know, the only other guy would be, like I said, Anderson. You just buy low and just take a shot at it and see. You know, you've certainly seen him with his style is his style, but we've certainly seen him get hot and be a pretty dynamic player.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, how Brian Cashman responds, because as I said, I don't think they have any idea when Judge is going to be coming back. The San Francisco Giants passed the Dodgers in the standings yesterday, Boog. I got to admit, you know, when they got off to that sluggish start and when you looked at the roster, I kind of was like, nah, you know, same kind of Giants team as last year. Maybe they're better.
I don't know. I mean, I just think – and here's what ends up happening is that because I did the Yankees Red Sox last night. I get to see a lot of teams, but I see the Cubs. So a lot of times stuff's built, you know, viewed through that filter, and the Cubs went out there and I didn't think the Giants looked very good. And the Giants' role started in the final game of that series where they salvaged the finale. Gosh, I just don't think, you know, when you ask me about the Central, it's like the National League is a general idea. There just aren't any teams that blow you away. It's not a very good league this year.
Okay. So you have naturally led me into a question, which I posed to Carl Ravitch and Sarah Langs and Todd Radom the other day. If you had to bet all of your life fortune on one team to win the World Series this year, okay, one team to win the World Series, to make a lot of money or completely lose your fortune, who would it be? And I'd say this. I think you're going to land in the same spot that Carl and Sarah and I all did. I'm not going to tell you why, because that'll reveal itself in a moment.
I mean, you ask me this question on June 19th every year, and I am spitting out an answer every time so fast, and I don't have it for you right now, and I don't feel passionate about my pick. I think I'd say the Rays.
Wow. Okay. See, we all landed on the Braves because of what you were talking about, that it feels like the National League field is at this moment so much easier than the American League field. The American League field feels like a landmine with potentially great teams.
Wow, you need Wright and Fried back and healthy and pitching well, or you go into a short series and you could lose really easily.
I think we're going to pair. Today's show is we don't know.
I know nothing. I mean, I know nothing. Oh, my God.
See if you can give me something on this one. Kyle Schwarber goes off in June. Every June, he goes nuts. You know Kyle Schwarber. What's that about?
I don't know. It's amazing, though, right? He just – look, he's one of these guys that can be uber streaky, and when it's bad, it can look really bad. And then he's also one of these guys that it legitimately feels as though he's going to hit a home run every single time he comes to the plate. He's one of those dudes.
Stanton being another one, by the way. Stanton is the same thing. Once he starts going off, it's impressive.
It's crazy. And for Schwarber, it's power, obviously, in every direction. I don't have the foggiest idea what it is about June for Schwarbs that gets him rolling.
Right. Scale of 1 to 10, how much in trouble are the Mets, with 10 being very much in trouble?
Yeah, I'd say like 8.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like it. Yeah. It was interesting over the weekend that Pete Alonso was activated so quickly to me.
I just think the other thing, I don't even, the idea of those two guys have got, I mean, I think that if they can stay close and get in, and but it's really all about Scherzer and Verlander, right? It's like the only story that we write here that has the Mets going deep into the playoffs is one that has one of them absolutely lights out, if not both of them absolutely lights out in the most important time of the year. And they just haven't really shown that.
No. And a lot of people asking questions around baseball is if this is the beginning of the end for each guy. Scherzer with the regression of his slider and the spin rate, and Verlander with the regression of his ride on his fastball. You hear that a lot from evaluators. All right, Boog, thanks for doing this. And I appreciate you for illuminating nothing about the National League Central. Come on,
Buster. You know I stink. I'm sorry. I'll be better. I'll be better next time. I'll live up to my intro.
All right, legend. I'll talk to you later.
Bye, bud.
After the Yankees lost game one of their doubleheader in Boston on Sunday, Giancarlo Stanton spoke with reporters about his recent slump and about the Yankees offense. You can hear in his voice, he's searching for answers.
How do you find your rhythm? Just continually getting at bats? Is there anything else you can do to try to help things click?
Yeah, reps help, this time I don't have time to just be taking reps to get them under my belt. So I need to be an impact when I'm in there. So I just need to figure it out.
As a whole, the offense just hasn't been producing consistently. What's the feeling like in there, knowing that the guys 1 through 9 are really struggling?
Don't think about what just happened. Don't think about the L we just had. We got an opportunity to get a win and leave on a good note in the off day. So that's all you can look at right now.
Is there any sense of pressure with Aaron out of the lineup in the IL right now?
We got to win games regardless. So it's a big blow for us, but we got to figure out how to win games. So that's the situation we're in. So can't have excuses.
Without Aaron, there's still a ton of talent in that lineup on this roster. Why do you think you guys haven't been able to find a consistency?
No direct answer. We just got to find rhythm and get a win tonight.
Aaron Boone was saying that at yesterday's game been played, you would have played the outfield. Now it may be Tuesday. Is that something you feel you're ready for? You're looking forward to?
Yeah, it'll be good.
Can that help you offensively? I know you like being out there.
It'll help the team being more dynamic. So it'll be good.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Kyle McDaniel is ESPN's draft and prospect expert. And look, normally on Mondays, we have a baggage claim Monday. It's because I'm someplace in an airport. Today, it's Kylie, who is at the world's busiest airport in Atlanta. Kylie, how you doing?
Good. I thought it might be not busy when I was here, but I was wrong. It is busy.
Yeah. And they called for boarding. So we're going to zip through this as quickly as we possibly can to make sure that you get your seat. Okay.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. I think I got some time, but it's not up for me to decide.
All right, we got this Bleacher tweet for you from Eric Sorensen, who asks, in your opinion, is anybody playing in Omaha this weekend who will be on a big league roster by the end of this year?
That's a good question. I'm on a group text with two of our analysts, Kyle Peterson and Chris Burke, and we've been having a back and forth. Chris Burke, very bullish on Paul Skeens, Kyle Peterson, former pitcher. And then me, the prospect dork. I think what will happen with Skeens, who looks like he'll probably be the second overall pick, but should go by 5 or 6, because there is a top tier of 5 guys. He's, I think, arguably the best pitcher since Garrett Cole. Some people are saying since all the way back to Strasburg, which is at least a dozen years, if not more. So we're talking like best draft pitching prospect in at least a dozen years, maybe a couple decades. And so I think the thought about where he fits right now is if you sign him tomorrow, you immediately send him to Double A. Have him go, you know, inning or two at a time, get him acquainted. And if he continues dominating the way he's been dominating, it would seem reasonable to then put him in AAA. And then eventually, if it keeps happening, put him in the big leagues for a couple innings at a time, maybe as many as 4 or 5, depending on innings limits and stuff. But like, there's nothing about how he's performing that suggests he can't do this in the big leagues. It's just like, do you want to rush him up there, maybe not find success, create some negative momentum? Like, that's the question you're thinking about. It's not, can he actually do it? Because it seems pretty obvious he could do it.
Okay, I've got a follow-up to that, but first I want you to set right now how you think the top of the draft is going to go.
So I did an 11-pick mini mock like a month ago, and I did an update like full mock a couple of weeks ago, and the sort of decision that you have to make as a mock prognosticator right now is, will it go chalk with Dylan Cruz going 1 to Pittsburgh, and then Paul Skeens going 2 to Washington, and then Wyatt Langford 3 to Detroit, and then Walker Jenkins 4 to Texas, and then Max Clark 5 to Minnesota. That's sort of like the chalk most likely outcome. That was my first mock. But the question is, it sounds like Max Clark, the guy who everyone thinks will probably go 5th if it goes straight, he is the option at 1 to Pittsburgh, because jumping from 5 to 1, you'd get some real savings. He's the one that then could go 1 and then shuffle all those guys down, where I think Cruz would then go 2. And then I'm not really sure how the rest of it would, how those other guys would go. And I was actually told that Minnesota would rather take Jacob Gonzalez, a guy at shortstop at Ole Miss, a guy outside of that top 5, instead of Paul Skeens, because their model is so against pitching. So there's a scenario where Skeens, as the best pitching prospect in at least a dozen years, might go 6th overall. And so that's why if Clark goes first, there's going to be mayhem, because nobody really knows how that'll play out yet.
Is there any team that you see, I guess Pittsburgh, you know, in theory, because they're in the National League Central race in a very weak division, might take Skeens with the idea of, you know what, this is immediate help. Like, I can remember that conversation going on when Chris Sale was in the draft. Is there any team that would, look at him as being a guy like, yeah, we could use this guy right now? Because if he goes 2 to Washington, like you're saying, there's not really any push for the Nationals to bring him to the big leagues.
Yeah, and given the sort of rookie of the year compensation rules, you're actually incentivized for him to open next year in the big leagues, I think would actually be the thing they'd be incentivized to do, and maybe that would create some excitement. But yeah, that is a question. If the team that takes him, which we'll say, you know, Pittsburgh obviously has the right of first refusal, would they be incentivized to bring him up? Like I said, I think he's good enough to do it. I think if you're in the race, then you have to consider it, because he will almost certainly be in the big leagues at some point next year. So why not get his feet wet, but retain rookie eligibility and then have him up opening day next year, sort of like a Gunnar Henderson or a Corbin Carroll, and handle it that way? The incentives are sort of in place now that if you're at all competitive, to handle it that way. And so I think especially how he's finishing here in Omaha, he doesn't look like he's getting tired or anything. I think you have to consider that. And it sounds like he's one of the 3 or 4 guys that are getting heavily considered at 1, but because he can't go do private workouts and all that kind of stuff, there's not as much dope leaking out about the Cruz Skeens duo, just because they can't go to private workouts. So we're not hearing quite as much as you do with the high school guys doing that sort of thing at this point.
I remember having a conversation with the late, great Kevin Towers in February before the Strasburg draft. and just asked him, hey, what have you been doing? Where have you been? He said, I just saw the best pitching prospect I've ever seen. And when I first saw Skeen's video of him, he kind of reminds me like he's a jumbo sized Strasburg. And that, but that physicality and the way that he dominates with his fastball, it again reminds me of Steven Strasburg in this regard. If you consider that, you know, in the last dozen years, velocity has jumped up for all prospects across the board. He feels like he physically dominates hitters in the way that Steven did back when he was at San Diego State. What do you see?
Yes, I would say that if you were just going to grade out the pitches, Strasburg was on his good days, basically all 70s and 80s on the 2080 scouting scale, which is like there's like two or three guys in the big leagues at that point that had that kind of raw stuff. And he was like good enough athlete, repeated his delivery, threw it over the plate. The command, I think, got us a notch better. So Strasburg in a lot of ways was seen as like sort of a perfect pitching prospect where like almost no one on earth at any time has ever had 380s, but he was getting really close while in college. So I don't think anybody thinks Skeens is that good. Also, Strasburg had like a sort of a multi-year runway into that where Skeens basically got good in the fall. I saw him the last two summers. He was just okay. He was like a second or third rounder at that point. So the fact that it's new, I think, brings him down a notch. Maybe even David Price gets thrown into that conversation as well. But if you grade out Skeens, it's like a 60 or 65 fastball. It's more of sort of a lower slot sinker as opposed to that four seam dominates at the top of the zone. The slider's at least a 70, if not an 80. And his curve and change, he doesn't use that often. They're both 55s that I think could be 60s. So if you just line the grades up, it's like a little less than Strasburg. And I think sort of the command and repeatability and athlete might be a little bit better and the track record's a little bit less. So I think he's like a notch below, but like he's pretty close. Like it's not that far off. And it's, again, it's not perfect, but it's about as perfect as we've seen in a while.
Kylie, you got a piece coming out later this week about unconventional draft strategy that you feel like the Yankees would benefit from. What's that about?
Yes, I went into it open-minded for what team will this make sense for, and it ended up being the Yankees, which for, you know, somebody that benefits from clicks and headlines and stuff, you're like, oh, how nice is that it's the Yankees? But the strategy, Jeff Passan wrote about it 4 years ago when the last CBA was new, that the incentives exist for certain kinds of teams to completely blow out their draft pool, which we saw happen a couple CBAs ago in the international market because the rules sort of suggested that was a good idea. And then once one or two teams did it, and then MLB sort of signaled and eventually changed the rules, then teams were like, hey, there's a two-year window where there's like no reason to not do this. They've already changed the rules. The owner will not get the ire of the league. And so teams started doing it. And there were like 10 teams, I think 8 or 10 teams doing it at the end of that period where there was essentially no reason not to. It was just, does your owner want to flip the bill? And so in the draft now, I am getting some clarification on some of the rules before we publish the article, but it seems like the Yankees, who have, I think, the second lowest pool in the whole draft because of free agent compensation and things like that, they could take a good player with their first round pick and then essentially signal to the industry, we'll be willing to pay $1.5 million, $2 million plus at every pick down the board and a total outlay of $20 or $30 million. And the penalty is just losing your next two first round picks, which could already be as low as 35 or 40. Based on going into the luxury tax, losing second and third picks, like you would essentially be giving away picks in years that you're already going to have the lowest pool anyway, and getting 3 years, if not more, of prospects all at once. And so the article is basically breaking down, like filter by filter, what are the things that would make a team not do this? And eventually it came down to Yankees and Dodgers, and the Yankees have $2 million less to spend this year. So they actually fit it perfectly. And I know that they're one of the teams that have talked about this internally, because it's just, you know, good business to kind of think about all these things every year. I think the only thing keeping a team from doing it is the owner doesn't want to get yelled at by the other owners for setting an economic precedent, because eventually he would essentially be saying, this is how much this player would be worth on the open market, in the same way that Yoan Moncada got paid, what, almost $65 million? And it sort of revealed that's how much that guy's worth. And then Ohtani later signed for like $2.5 million. Like, we kind of knew what the discount was. It was tens of millions of dollars, almost $100 million. And so if you start doing this domestically, you would be essentially admitting this high school player is actually worth $15 million because we signed him for, you know, 12 or whatever it was. And I don't think the league wants that to happen. So that's the only force really keeping a team from doing it. And I would assume Hal Steinbrenner will not do it, but like everything is there suggesting he should.
And you're right. I mean, as you were laying that out and you said Dodgers and Yankees, despite the fact that they consistently post, you know, some of the highest payrolls in the sport, both those teams seem to paint within the lines that the other owners want. Where on the other hand, I think you and I would agree that right now, Steve Cohen and Peter Seidler, the owner of the Padres, the owner of the Mets, those are the two teams that at this point, they probably wouldn't care.
And the funny thing is I eliminated them because their records weren't good enough currently, because there's a chance that they just don't get deep enough that they'd be giving away a mid first round pick. But then I actually bring them back in the discussion and say, if we're trying to adjust for the mentality of the owner, these two are the two that would do it. And also AJ Preller. I mean, that's exactly his biggest strength, is drafting and developing high school players. So it's like, it fits him perfectly and their system is stand out. So like there's, you could make a case for, at one point, I think I stop and say, these are all the teams that could reasonably do this, that could justify it. And it was 12 teams. Like there's a lot of teams that could talk about it. And the even crazier part is once you do it, you're incentivized to keep doing it until they change the rules. So if some team does it, then all of a sudden other teams will feel free to do it because the precedent's been set. And then that team will just keep doing it until the rules change, which would probably take a couple of years. So it's a really interesting concept of sort of like, I mean, it's not Tragedy of the Commons, but I'm sure there is like some economic term that describes this, that nobody wants to jump, but then once they jump, everybody's going to get in the pool.
Before you go, before we board the plane, what are the Pirates getting with Henry Davis being called to the big leagues?
The question with him has always been, is he going to be good enough defensively to be an everyday catcher in a non-robo-ump world? I think he'll be okay. I think he could play third if he needed him to. He's probably right now more of a first base DH occasional catcher. But the sales pitch is basically, it's going to be 260, 270, good amount of walks, chance for 35, maybe even 40 home runs as a guy with giant raw power, strength-based raw power that knows how to get to it in games. And there's just not a lot of those guys in the league. So the chance that he could hit is huge. The chance that, what if he hits 240, strikes out too much, he's a right-handed hitting first baseman, turns into a platoon guy, that's like the bad outcome. It seems unlikely. I think he'll hit enough to be an everyday first baseman at least, but there's a chance there's even a little more in there.
Before I go, I lied. I got one more question for you. Francisco Alvarez, how surprised are you by how rapidly he seems to have improved defensively?
I actually, one of the first games I've covered on sort of the big league, going to the clubhouse, interview people basis was the big Braves Mets series last year. And I used to work for Billy Epler way back in the day with the Yankees. And I saw him during like sort of the scrum and I pulled him aside and I was like, it was when Alvarez was making his big league debut. So he was like the topic everyone was talking about. And I kind of pulled him aside and I was just like, is he improving behind the plate? And his eyes kind of lit up. He's like, yeah, he's getting a lot better. And it was sort of like, oh, that wasn't what would happen if he wasn't actually getting better and he was lying to me. And when his eyes lit up, I was like, oh, they think he can do this. And then he sort of DH'd and, you know, did some stuff here and there. And like, I think that's going to be a higher maintenance body. Like it's not something that's a slam dunk to happen for the next 10 years that he'll be this guy. But when I saw Billy's eyes light up, I was like, oh, okay. Like he thinks this guy's going to do it. And then I started calling around and guys were like, yeah, no, he's definitely improved at the level that you need to. Like he seems fully bought in and doing this. So I don't think this is necessarily going down like a Gary Sanchez kind of route, which some people thought early in the minor leagues, he might be one of those guys that's just okay. Or maybe doesn't care that much or how's it going to go. And I don't think that's who it is now.
All right, Kylie, get on the plane. Thanks for doing this.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. First up, we have Cito Samuel, a.k.a. Big Cito, at K Salcito 12, writes, "An on-field interviews are fire. I see why Buster is always cooking whoever has something negative to say about him." I love this tweet from Cito.
Yeah, well, overnight last night, I had Alex Cora on. Alex lost his father to cancer when he was 13. I've known Alex forever, known his brother forever. I know how much their father meant to him. And so I asked Taylor, I asked him in the middle of the game, I you know, when I did the in-game interview, he said, you know, today's Father Day, you lost your dad when you were a teenager. You know, what are some memories you have of your father? And he had this very touching memory about being in the room when his father would call in box scores from, you know, the amateur games that he did on radio. And like a couple people were coming at me and I'm like, come on. Like, really?
That's a touching part of the broadcast.
Give me a break.
It's Father's Day. He's probably thinking about that, whether you asked or not.
He was thinking about it. He related those stories before the game to us. And that's the thing. Like, you know, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I suspect the people coming at me probably haven't lost a parent the way that Alex Cora has, the way that I have, for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know. When your parent dies on Mother's Day and Father's Day, you're going to think about that parent. It's very natural.
Thank you, Taylor. Yeah, very much appreciate that.
Your interviews are fire, Buster. They always are. Amy Chapman, she writes in, "Do you think the terrible Major League Baseball owner's lawyer and the 30 people he represents would ever entertain an offer for an expansion team from a foreign government, live golf-esque, or are there internal MLB rules against that?"
Huh. Well, I think they would entertain an offer. Yeah. I mean, it's a professional. I think it's a professional sports league. He wouldn't be doing his job, quite frankly, if he didn't entertain. You know, it's interesting. Taylor, I'm curious to see. I didn't follow up with you about in this conversation the other day. I think Carl has a little different view where he feels like the commissioner does need to oversee the you know, not only the interest of the owners, but maybe a little bit the fans. I just don't look at it that way. I think everything that Rob says, I take through the, you know, the prism of he's the owner's representative. And that's the bottom line. It's sort of like when you see a trial that plays out, you know, the defense lawyer might say some things and you think that's ridiculous. Well, he's the defense's lawyer. And that's what Rob is doing. He represents the owners. He doesn't represent fans. He doesn't represent the players.
Yeah, it would be nice if he had more of an eye on the fans and the players and kind of the overall experience for everyone. But yeah, he's trying to make money for the owners. And it's unfortunate. That's, you can see it in all these leagues too. That's like what the commissioner role has turned into. I think Adam Silver might try and walk that line a little bit, but really like Roger Goodell, Gary Bettman, the guy who runs the MLS, like they're all the same. It's kind of a bummer, but that's how it is.
Well, and it really changed about 30 years ago when Faye Vincent got run out as commissioner. He, to me, was like one of the last baseball commissioners who tried to thread that needle. And then Bud Selig took over because they didn't want the commissioner to be someone that they had to fight against when they were dealing with the internal business issues. You, quite frankly, you can see it from the owner's perspective.
Yeah, right? Of course.
You can pay a guy $25, $50 million a year. Yeah. You don't want to have Rob Manfred saying, no, you know, go to the Athletics and say, no, John Fisher, you're not allowed to do this. He's your employee, for God's sake.
Yep.
You don't want that, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why when we talk about, you know, a team tanking or an issue like, you know, with John Fisher, don't blame Rob Manfred. Anybody who blames Rob Manfred for baseball's problem is missing the boat. The problem is are the owners. Like the owners are the ones with the actual power as opposed to Rob, who sort of, you know, he's the point on the spear as opposed to actually being the power behind it.
Yeah, it would, not that it would make anything better, but like Rob Manfred could take a communications class and just learn how to soften the blow with his words a little bit. You know, this thing with
sometimes
the Athletics. Yeah, I mean, it makes you think about the World Series trophy thing where he was like, oh, it's just a piece of metal. Like, dude, like how would you not consider, you know, how people are going to react to that? Like, just.
Well, and I would say this about Rob, and look, he's never going to tell us. I bet you there are situations where he goes out and does his job as the owner's commissioner, says different things, and then he goes in the back room and holds his nose, much like probably there's some defense lawyers who do the same thing, right? Oh, my God, my client is what a terrible human being this person is, right? And I bet you Rob at times, he's forced out front because of his role, and he says things, and he goes back, oh, my God.
And you know, the old saying. That's what the money's for.
Right. Exactly.
I
appreciate Ravi's perspective. I don't agree with it.
Gabriel at Bold as Bronze writes in, is the NL West the GOAT rodeo division again? I think it's the NL Central.
I think today we kind of determined the National League Central, where Boog said, well, four of the five teams have a chance. Then we talked him into a fifth team having a chance.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a division other than the National League Central, where all five teams we feel like have a chance.
Taylor Welch, Taylor Gang over here. Hey, Buster, based off of Bryce Harper's comments, I agree that the A's name should stay in Oakland. What do we think about the Las Vegas Crusaders? Maybe a bronze or green color scheme. Now we're going to get into naming business now that this thing is officially over.
Yeah, I agree with Bryce. I wish the A's would stay. Or be held out and be given to a more representative franchise, but that's just not going to happen. You know, the Raiders went to Las Vegas. It's part of the attraction if you're trying to sell a team to a new fan base. I mean, the A's are one of the most historic franchises in the sport. You have to keep that name.
I guess so. All right, Matthew Porto, last one for today. 30-year-old Mulberry writes in, I'm a Dodgers fan, but my pick to win the World Series is the Orioles. Oh, no, Matthew. He writes, Taylor, you should be ashamed for yourself for not picking them. I would never do such a thing. No way.
Wow. Look at that.
I'll bet against them on the day-to-day, but I'm not picking them to win the World Series. They're a flawed team right now, Buster.
Well, and on top of that, I think there's a little bit. You have a tiny bit of superstition in you, yes?
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't really, they're not the best team in baseball. They're maybe the fifth best team, but I don't know that they'd be able to win, you know, multiple series. That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's fair.
Well,
but I appreciate Matthew for picking them.
Yeah, 100%. And you know what? Who knows? I mean, the big test for ownership, the next big test, to the Orioles ownership is going to be the trade deadline. And it would be really cool if you saw the Orioles go all in, because it looks like they're going to make the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Be in the playoffs. And it would be awesome if the ownership was all in and threw a bunch of resources and was willing to add payroll to a team that looks like it has a chance. And it's clear starting pitching is the would be the area of need, right?
Yeah, starting pitching. It's been a little bit better, though. Kramer and Bradish have been better. I think really they need some help in the middle of the bullpen, maybe a long reliever, maybe another bat. We're going to see some significant movement, I think, finally, you know, with their prospects. I think we're going to see Jordan Westberg up here pretty soon. So, you know, there's definitely things happening here. It's just a matter of how hard they're going to go in on it. But they'll make a move, okay. I think.
I hope they do. I mean, the players have earned it, but, you know, we said that last year, too.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Hashtag BleacherSweets on Twitter. Thanks, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Boo, to Kylie, to Taylor, to Sarah. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Woo.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.